northeast at 12, 51 Kenosha, 48 Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. It's 10 past 8. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. There will be a lot of music on today's program. We are talking about two different wonderful orchestral concerts. And the first one that we're going to be talking about is the first one that occurs. The performance is tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock in Francis Bedford Auditorium in the Rita on the campus of the University of Wisconsin, Parkside. An orchestra concert there that will be conducted by Maestro Alvaro Garcia. And it will feature a very, very special guest who is also a guest in this portion of the morning show, Jeannie Kim, who is Associate Concertmaster for the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra. And she will be performing the Mozart Violin Concerto in A major with the Parkside Orchestra. Moreover, she is serving this week, has served this week, as the Howard Brown Guest Artist in Residence. So we will be finding out about some of the things that are part of that and talk a bit about the violin itself and this beautiful violin concerto by Mozart. Alvaro Garcia and Jeannie Kim, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Good to have both of you with us today. Maestro Alvaro Garcia, explain to our listeners this whole business of the Howard Brown Artist in Residence. And of course, longtime Kenoshans know the name of Howard Brown very well and his long, impressive legacy. Tell us about this specific aspect of his legacy, this Artist in Residence program.
So basically, as everyone knows, Howard Brown was the owner of the Kenosha News, and he was always in love with symphonic repertoire and the orchestra itself. And it is his widow Betsy Brown who established this endowment for us to bring soloists of high caliber and local artists or connected to the area of Kenosha and Racine or southeastern Wisconsin that they will give back to the community by performing with us and giving master classes. So in this case with Jeannie Kim. She'll be performing the Mozart Violin Concerto No. 5, and she's also giving, or I will say, she actually gave a masterclass back on Monday at UW Parkside for all the UW Parkside music students there.
Very good. So, Jeannie Kim, I'm curious, have you ever received an invitation exactly like this before? Is this something that's a relatively common sort of opportunity for a musician like yourself?
I have never done something like this. No, I mean, I have taught, as Alvaro knows, I taught at University of Wisconsin Parkside early on in my time in Milwaukee. And I very much enjoy teaching. I've taught for a very long time, even since I was a student myself at Yale. But I've never done a week-long residence, so I'm so excited to, and I'm very grateful to my dear friend, Alvaro, for inviting me. I really look forward to seeing and working with the students there, and in both in the masterclass and in the orchestra. I find that in rehearsal, I can impart a lot also when working as a soloist with the orchestra.
So just in the kind of things you say about, for instance, this concerto and certain decisions you're making and the conductor is making and that you're making together.
Yeah. I mean, Alvaro and I are we've known each other for a while, but we are... and. Even though Kenosha is how many miles away from Milwaukee?
Not that many.
we don't get to work together very often because we're each so busy in our own musical worlds. Yeah. So this is a really wonderful opportunity. And when you work on a piece of music, you really get to know someone's internal thought processes and how it's developed over the years by the choices that they make through their phrasing, everything, interpretation. So this is going to be a really nice experience.
I think it's truly remarkable that through the gift of Betsy Brown, we are able to bring someone of high caliber like Jenny Kim that our community players and our students can model behind and see what is going on in the professional world. You know, part of the masterclass also had a portion of Q&A where students were able to ask questions about the professional world for a professional musician out there. So to have that connection to the real world, I think is very important. And to have someone of the caliber, musical caliber of Jenny Kim, actually talking to our community volunteers and students is just phenomenal.
That's great. Tell us about this specific work, the fifth and final of the violin concertos of Mozart, and an absolutely beautiful work. What kind of a pleasure is it for you to play?
Well, I've always loved the music of Mozart. I think it's very, I think some of his best works are his operas and piano concerti. And to be honest, of the complete oeuvre, I don't know how to say it correctly, okay. His violin concerti, I believe, are not quite on par with the operas and the piano concerto in overall scope, but they are wonderful works, and I have truly enjoyed working more in depth. I know 3, 4, and 5. I don't know the first two, but I really believe. But I have performed in the orchestra for the first two. The fifth concerto is kind of the pinnacle of the five violin concerti. And it kind of takes the most risks compositionally. I mean, it's known as the Turkish. and that's because of the appearance of this kind of Turkish march out of nowhere, really. It seems like out of nowhere in the last movement, Rondo. Which gives it a kind of flair that the others don't quite have. But it still has the operatic singing quality, which was a very unusual slow introduction that it has in the first movement.
Yes.
And then, of course, just the overall liveliness and optimism of that it has in character. I just love it.
That's a great word for it. And the singing quality of many of the passages, I identify with that deeply. And I agree with you. In some respects, it's an especially distinctive concerto by Mozart.
It
has this wonderful flavor like none other. And what a treat for us to be able to hear it performed. By the way, Maestro, what are the other pieces that are going to be played on tomorrow afternoon's concert?
So as an introductory plate, if you think about dinner time, this is more like I try to figure out something that will go something with the fifth concerto, because to me, the fifth concerto is when kind of Mozart breaks quite a bit the rules.
Yeah.
So I'm also breaking a little bit the rules, so I decided to bet on Bizet, Georges Bizet. And we are going to have like a extravaganza from three different movements chosen from three different suites. So Carmen 1, Carmen 2, and La Lassienne suite number 2.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a mixture of all those, kind of like to bring the excitement into the audience on the concert hall.
Yeah.
Just let it put easiness for the turnover to the Mozart, which is also
wonderful choice. Yeah,
you know, working those rules and so on, and the excitement of that Turkish last rondo movement that we have there, right? And connecting all those worlds, I think it was a very good pairing of the two. So
love that, great idea, and of course in this beautiful Francis Bedford Concert Hall. Now, will this be your first time playing in there?
No. I mean, I've played solo as and also, I mean, solo violin and quartet. Mm-hmm. A number of times Philharmonic Quartet has performed there. It's a lovely, yeah. lovely hall.
Very yeah. good. So how is it that you chose the violin a few years ago?
That's kind. Well, as a young 4-year-old, I would tag along with my sister to her violin lessons, and I just kind of followed suit. I loved hearing her play and wanted to do the same, and my mother said I just picked up and kind of played it.
Took to it, so it chose you as much as you chose it.
Very much, very much. It feels that way.
Very yeah. good. How long have you been with the Milwaukee Symphony?
I have been there since 2001, so
wow.
over 20 years.
Wow.
Long time. Yeah.
I have enjoyed so much the last couple of performances that I've heard in, I still call it your new home, your new performance
yeah.
home, because that's... It's still quite new to me. It took me a couple of years before I managed to get there. I'm just curious if it feels like home for the orchestra and what you think of it.
It has been such a cherished, welcomed home
mm-hmm.
for the orchestra. I think for a long time, and I don't want to say anything about, you know, the Marcus Center, but to have your own home gives you an identity as an orchestra.
Yes.
And it, in many ways, it is an additional instrument
mm.
in our orchestra because of the acoustical enhancement it gives. I think I have experienced and I've heard testament from our audience members that especially on the balcony, but also in parts of the orchestra floor seating, it feels like you're hearing it right next to your ear.
Mm.
it's remarkable. I don't know how it's possible, but it just like you see the harp, you know, strumming the strings, and it sounds like it's right next to you, mm-hmm. and that's a really magical feeling.
Absolutely. And the other thing I'll say as an audience member is that space is so beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just it's a warmer environment, and you just feel good even before you've heard the first note played.
It's
and,
true.
Yeah. So
true.
That's amazing. So you have this experience working with young people. Tell us what the particular pleasures are of taking time out of what is otherwise a busy career making music yourself to collaborate with young musicians.
I always find it so, I guess, invigorating to teach people of all ages, really. And it's different. Every age is different and every personality is different. So I really try not to just I try to tailor my teaching to the individual, and I really, when they play for me, I try to get almost like the way, I guess, a doctor tries to assess a lot about the person. I try to assess what this person is like, what things they need help on, basically how I can best help them.
Hmm.
And also, if they play for me a piece, I don't want to just spoon feed, this is how I do it. I want to help them to learn how to help themselves. And so, if I feel like the major problem facing them has to do with their mental state, how they approach the instrument, or if I feel like their major hurdle is something technical, I will address that first, rather than this is how I play this piece that you're playing. Because I feel that if I do that, that's only kind of a short-term thing to offer, which is not bad, and I will touch on that too, but I would rather leave them with something that will last them for a while, that they'll be able to remember and apply to anything that they work on.
I love that. I think that's a wonderful idea, and teachers everywhere should take that to heart, that idea that each of these students is an individual and thinking carefully about what can be of most benefit to them, and especially in a lasting way. You sound like a very wise teacher indeed, and I'm glad that some of the students at Parkside have been able to benefit from that. Maestro Alvaro Garcia, remind our listeners about the concert tomorrow afternoon that you are so excited about.
So it's tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. in Bedford Concert Hall. Tickets are still available online, or they can be purchased at the door. It's 10 and 5 for adults and children and seniors. And I really hope that our community takes the time to come see our orchestras, see these remarkable solos that we have, that we will have tomorrow at our concert, and really hoping for a true day of lots of fun with great music to play and listen to.
Very good. Alvaro Garcia will be on the podium, and Jeannie Kin will be the soloist for the Mozart Violin Concerto No. 5. My thanks to both of you for being part of the morning show. Best wishes to you and all of the musicians taking part in tomorrow afternoon's concert.
Thank you very much, Ray.
Thank you for having us.
You're listening to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We're going to spend the next few minutes talking about yet another orchestral concert that is happening this weekend. And happily, this concert and the one we were just talking about are not on top of one another in the calendar. One can very easily enjoy the concert we just talked about at UW Parkside in the afternoon, and then in the evening, take in what promises to be a truly beautiful concert presented by the Racine Symphony Orchestra, their Spring Masterworks concert, which also finishes out their current regular season. It is a concert titled Simple Gifts, and it is a perfect title. And you will agree as well once you hear about some of the repertoire that has been carefully chosen and woven together by the artistic director of the Racine Symphony Orchestra, Pasquale Larino, who is not only going to be conducting, but even doing some playing on tomorrow night's concert. That is 7:30 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church. And Pasquale Larino, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thanks so much, Greg. Pleasure to be here.
I am glad we can have this conversation about what promises to be a truly exquisite concert with this wonderful title of Simple Gifts. Could you just, before we start digging into the specifics, just talk for a moment about both the pleasure and the challenge of programming, of putting together programs beyond kind of the obvious format of overture, concerto, intermission, symphony, which is, you know, kind of an old school way, nothing wrong with that. But talk about the challenge and delight of putting together programs that fall under themes and weave together very different pieces together. Just talk about that part of the job that you do as artistic director of the Racine Symphony.
Well, you described it perfectly. It is a challenge and a delight. This program, I knew that I wanted to do the original version of Appalachian Spring. And of course, we're all familiar probably most often with the full orchestra version of this marvelous piece, this American Masterworks. And one of the most recognizable features of the Copland is his incorporating the American tune Simple Gifts, which is something that we hear as a piece of music in church. It's been set to liturgical texts as well as vernacular ones. It is lovely, somehow evokes early Americana in a beautiful way. So that was a given going into the program. I also knew that we had Our artist in residence this week is Stephen Ayers, a very fine pianist who will be playing the keyboard part on the Bach Brandenburg Concerto No. 5. And as it happens, the set of Brandenburg Concertos was originally given as a gift to the Margrave of Brandenburg in the hopes that Bach might get a job. There was ulterior motives there, but a gift nonetheless. So that seemed to work very well with the Simple Gifts program. And then, of course, I think one of the most beautiful gifts that any husband has given to a wife, Wagner gave and surprised his wife Cosima on Christmas Day in 1870 with music that came from his opera, his magnum opus, The Ring of the Nibelung, in this Siegfried Idyll. Their son was born just the year before, so their childhood tunes, there are melodies that were certainly familiar within that Wagner household, as well as melodies present in the opera that he was currently working on. So this became, again, getting closer to the idea of this sincerely given the simple gifts, or maybe not so simple as the case is with the repertoire. And then we flesh out the rest of the program with a modern piece, a piece written in 1980, and it was written to commemorate and in memoriam to the death of Benjamin Britten by Arvo Pärt, the Estonian composer, and he writes this this work as a tribute, as a gift, if you will, to a respected colleague.
That is such a lovely program and put together so thoughtfully. And I know a lot of people will be excited to take this in. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Pasquale Larino, who is Artistic Director of the Racine Symphony Orchestra. And their concert tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. in the sanctuary of First Presbyterian Church is titled Simple Gifts, with this lovely array of works by Bach, Wagner, Britten, Pärt, and Aaron Copland. Let's talk for a moment about these very familiar and beloved Brandenburg concertos of Bach, and these works that so easily could have been lost to the world, but fortunately were sort of accidentally preserved. And of course, as a totality, they represent something truly masterful and really, really special. And of course, this fifth concerto is an especially compelling masterpiece.
I agree. It is really remarkable that we even have these pieces. As I mentioned, they were given as a gift to this nobleman in Brandenburg, we don't know if they were ever played at that time, if it just went onto the stack. It was not until well over 100 years after Bach's death that the pieces were discovered, sold to a publisher for a paltry sum, and then were finally, when people recognized what we had here, which are six extraordinary concertos. Each one of them is different from the next. A full orchestra, very rich version in the first concerto, and pared down to by the sixth concerto, just for violas, cello, bass, and continuo. The fifth concerto is extraordinary in that it really can be considered maybe one of the first piano or keyboard concertos, because Bach seems to leave the other soloists, the violin and the flute, as well as the rest of the ensemble, in the dust as when he gets to the cadenza in the first movement. Clearly, Bach, we know, was an extraordinary keyboardist, and I think that this probably would remind the Margrave of Brandenburg of the great keyboard skills that Bach had, and maybe that would entice him to hire him in the future.
Mm-hmm. Talk for a moment about the experience of also playing in this particular performance of the Brandenburg Concerto number 5. I'm all but certain that this is not the first occasion that this has happened during your time with the Racine Symphony, but it's relatively rare for you or for any, you know, conductor, and yet one can certainly understand why it would be tempting to do so and a wonderful experience for everybody concerned.
Well, it is always great to play with the musicians. I always tell the orchestra, well, this week I'm earning money legitimately because I'm having to play my acts and not only tell the musicians what to do, but actually be able to show that I can do it myself. Therein lies a bit of the pressure, but there also is, historically, it is most appropriate for, in this instance, in music that comes from this time, for the keyboardist or the concertmaster to lead the ensemble, and I will take that role as concertmaster, sitting right with the musicians leading this. Of course, having a very prominent keyboard player abreast of me will be sharing those leading roles, certainly. But this is always a great occasion. It certainly lends itself to the authentic performance practice of the time.
Right. I loved the introduction you gave for the Siegfried Idyll of Richard Wagner, as you said, composed as a gift for his second wife, Cosima, and something that was played for the very first time in the Wagner home, and something so intimate, and yet it is an exquisite piece of music. And also my sense in listening to it is it's probably harder to play than one might assume. I mean, it's not like it's a blizzard of 16th notes, but in other ways, this is a piece that is difficult. There's not a lot to hide behind in terms of achieving perfect intonation and so on. I'm sure this represents a really gratifying and special challenge for your musicians.
Yes, it does. Clearly, Wagner was a very difficult composer for his contemporaries to try to deal with, this music of astounding complexity, and having it pared down to just individual members playing in a chamber music setting is very difficult. You can't, there's no place to hide. So this is the challenge in doing a work like this, to give it its intimate feeling, although there are times when he's boisterous. And clearly, if Cosima was not awake initially when the musicians started playing this music, certainly by the midway point, she would certainly take notice and get out of bed, because the group is rallying at full tilt at certain times.
It's just a beautifully constructed work, and it will be a real treat to be able to hear this played live. And, of course, the program also includes three works from the 20th century, including a portion of the so-called Simple Symphony of Benjamin Britten, and then this piece by Avril Pärt, Cantus in Memoriam for Benjamin Britten. That's a piece I have not heard, but we should probably reassure people that for those that fear that anything from the 20th century is going to be dissonant and harsh and unpleasant, that Avril Pärt is the kind of composer who writes music that falls very easily on the ear, and I would assume this is yet another piece like that.
Indeed. Basically, if you don't like this piece, you don't like an A minor scale, because he has constructed this piece in a way that very cleverly. There is a bell that is tolled, which obviously evokes the times that we recognize the passing of an individual with a single bell chime. That is on the pitch A in this instance. And then the first violins play a descending figure very, very softly, going down the scale stepwise. And then the second violins, when they enter, they enter in augmentation with this same pattern, twice as slow as the scale that the first violins had. And the violas follow through in the same pattern, twice as slow as the second violins have, and it continues with the cello and bass. And so you have this layering of this minor scale, which is fundamental to our musical language, but played, I think, very poignant to hear intermittently this bell tolling, as though, yes, this is one of the components of, we associate the minor scale with a sad or grief written pieces, but to construct it as carefully and beautifully as Pärt has done is, I think, to recognize the craftsmanship of his colleague, Benjamin Britten.
Wonderful. And, of course, we've already mentioned and probably don't need to say too much about Copland's beloved so-called ballet for Martha, Martha being Martha Graham, his ballet Appalachian Spring, which, as you said, utilizes in such memorable fashion the Shaker hymn tune Simple Gifts. Talk for a moment about the original orchestration with which this work is going to be played, something that is perhaps going to be a first for many people at this concert who might otherwise be very familiar with Copland's Appalachian Spring, but not necessarily in exactly this way.
Well, we go back to the origins of the piece. Clearly, it was written as a ballet, and a ballet for Martha Graham's company. Almost the very measure of austerity when you imagine the Martha Graham ballets. There's not a lot of specific scenery, and really pared down to the minimum elements. And Copland's, I think it would have been inappropriate to have the forces of a large symphony orchestra in that sense. So the 13 instruments work beautifully for what were the parameters of accompanying a ballet at that time. Of course, the piece really took hold. It received the Pulitzer Prize. That doesn't hurt. And consequently, a full orchestra version was made of it. The full ballet was condensed to a suite. And all of that, I think, really helped to catapult this masterwork in the public conscious. It also comes on the heels of Copland's other ballets like Billy the Kid and Rodeo that I think were also really made him the father figure of American music in the mid 20th century.
So all in all, this promises to be an absolutely exquisite concert coming up tomorrow evening, 7:30 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church in downtown Racine, a gorgeous space in which to enjoy the music making of the Racine Symphony in music of Bach, Wagner, Britten, Pärt, and Aaron Copland, a concert titled Simple Gifts. I'm sure there will be tickets available at the door. I suspect that they can also be purchased ahead of time through the website. Is that right?
That is correct. There is, I should mention, a pre-concert talk about this program. I think a lot needs to be said about the music, and although some of it will be familiar to the audience, the construction of this program, as much that we've alluded to now, we'll be discussing at a pre-concert, which is, of course, free to the public at 6:30.
Very good. And more information available, of course, at racinesymphony.org, including what is coming next for the Racine Symphony. Maestro Pasquale Larino, great to speak with you again. Thank you so much. Best wishes to you and your musicians.
Always a pleasure, Greg. Thanks so much.
You're listening to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. And for our third and final interview of the day, we're going to shift gears a bit, but still very much remain within the realm of music. Specifically, a lively, energetic musical that opens tonight at Carthage College in Wartburg Auditorium. It's a so-called jukebox musical comedy called Head Over Heels. And I'm so excited to be able to speak for the next few minutes with Bree Brillo, who is a proud Carthage graduate and the stage director of this production of Head Over Heels, which opens tonight and runs this weekend and the following weekend as well. And we're going to be talking about what makes this such a fun show and what it's like for Bree to be back at Carthage directing and still very much a part of the musical theater scene at her alma mater. Bree Brillo, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you so much, Greg. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm glad we can have this conversation. Before we talk about Head Over Heels, let's talk about your time at Carthage. Remind me, first of all, what year did you graduate from Carthage?
I graduated in 2013.
And back then, I mean, musical theater was already a part of what was happening at Carthage, but not in quite the colossal way that it is now. Back then, was it possible to actually direct all of your musical studies towards musical theater? I mean, was that your major with which you graduated?
Yeah. So I actually, back then, you could double major in theater performance and musical theater. So I was a double major. And so I kind of created my own BFA, you know, through that way. So I was a double major in musical theater, theater performance, and I just loved it. Like, Carthage is wonderful, obviously. I keep coming back, so it's an amazing community that Carthage has created. But I was so lucky to be able to be in a lot of production, not only just musical theater, but a lot of the theater productions as well. And one of my favorites was The Drowsy Chaperone, which was my junior year.
Oh, I remember that vividly, yes.
Yeah, it was one of my favorites because I actually was able to see the touring production in Chicago before I decided, you know, to pursue this career. And I remember sitting in the theater and the show had ended and I was just so enamored and, you know, it made me want to do this, right? To be a performer, to do musical theater. And so then to be able to be the lead, my junior year in that show is so wonderful and such a wonderful experience.
Fantastic. You also continued your studies at Carthage by getting your master's there. Tell us what it was like to come back to Carthage as a student and what you feel like you benefited, in what ways you benefited from that graduate work at Carthage in musical theater.
Yeah, I was able to come back during the pandemic, actually, for the musical theater vocal pedagogy graduate program. And it really helped change the trajectory of my career and my life in a good way. I have been performing professionally ever since I graduated, and I was able to not only take the skills that I've learned as a professional actor and teacher, but get more knowledge, right? So I have my own vocal studio. I was able to work with several different places, you know, different companies teaching lessons, voice, and things like that. And then it has just helped boost my directing career as well. So I have directed at First Stage, their musical. I have another musical coming up after Head Over Heels that I'm going to be directing. So just so many more opportunities have come. And I've also grown as a singer and a performer because I've gotten that extra education. And, you know, you forget. you work professionally for a really long time, but it's always nice to be able to go back to school and learn more.
So what does it feel like to, in a sense, be on the other side of the table and to be the director versus the performer? And this is not the first time you have directed something, but nevertheless, you're relatively new at it. And I should think at least part of you, it probably feels a little bit strange, and yet it seems to be something to which you are taking, I mean, in very comfortable fashion. I mean, obviously, it's a great fit. What's it been like to shift over at least part of your professional energies towards directing?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it's very eye-opening. everybody always tells you as a performer, you know, oh, well, it's not you, right? You can be the most talented person in the room, and there's just all these extenuating circumstances, right? That, like, why you maybe don't get the role. And so you always take that, like, with a grain of salt as a performer, but being on the other side of the table, like, it is very true. there's a lot that goes into a production. And so I think that the biggest thing that I've learned in that sense is that we just have to go and do our best, you know, and then really it's out of our hands. And if you can feel good about the work that you did in that audition or that callback or whatever, you need to hold on to that, right? Versus, well, you know, having all the questions of why. And I think that I've always kind of had a director brain. So even when I am a performer, like, I'm noticing everything. I'm seeing the bigger picture that the director is trying to portray. So being able to step into that role, like, it's really exciting to kind of have my own vision and then see that be brought up, and magically happen before my eyes, which is really exciting.
I should think. For those of you just joining us for this final portion of today's morning show, I'm speaking with a Carthage grad, Bree Bielo, who has been a very busy performer on musical stages across the country and is back at her alma mater, Carthage College, as stage director for the next musical there, the main stage musical of the spring semester. It's a so-called jukebox musical called Head Over Heels, and it opens tonight and it runs for the next two weekends. Bree Bielo, explain to our listeners what Head Over Heels is about, and maybe clarify this notion of a jukebox musical for the sake of anybody listening who's not familiar with that term.
Yes, of course. So jukebox musicals are songs that you already know, that you would hear on a jukebox, right? So this particular musical, Head Over Heels, features all the music of the Go-Go's. And it is a fun, fun, fun musical. You will be up in your seats, hopefully dancing along with everyone. And I'm really excited to bring this musical to Kenosha and to Carthage because it has a lot of wonderful things about relationships and human identity and everything like that that I think we really need. And just love, right? This musical is about love and about acceptance, and that is all done through the Go-Go's music, as well as this story from the Arcadia that they have kind of smushed together. And I'm really excited to bring it to you all.
Is this a show that you had some hand in it being chosen? Or was this already the spring main stage show and you were simply brought in to direct it?
Yes, this is already the spring show. And so I was fortunate enough to be able to be asked to come in and do it. And when that sort of happens, when you are kind of offered a musical, you don't necessarily have a vision in your brain, right? And so that was really exciting for me to be able to see the musical and then kind of come up with my concept. And I really hope that the concept that I have brought, which is this traveling music troupe, right, this traveling theater troupe, is performing the Arcadia. And then all of a sudden these magical things start happening. And we hear 80s music in the middle of this Elizabethan story. So that has been really fun to kind of put together and work with the students and have the magic actually come alive.
Wow. I don't know a whole lot about the Go-Go's. They were a band that emerged, I think, in the mid to late 70s and sang and played together for a few years. One of the interesting things about the Go-Go's is that it's a group that ended up being kind of torn apart by various disagreements and lawsuits, one member kind of suing the others and so on. Do we experience any of that in the musical Head Over Heels, or is Head Over Heels, in a sense, more focused on when things were going well for the Go-Go's and in a sense, the happier side of their life as a successful group?
Sure. So this musical isn't necessarily like a biopic. I know there's a lot of jukebox musicals that do focus on the actual artists. This one is more like Mamma Mia, where they take the songs of the group and put it to another story. So there are troubles and tribulations in this musical, but not necessarily focused on the members of the group.
So tell us what the experience has been like to put this together, and what has been fun, what has been challenging, and a little bit about what people can expect if they attend Carthage's production of Head Over Heels.
Yeah, well, the students have been amazing. They are resilient, and they are so talented. and so I am so excited for people to be able to come out and see the work that they have done, because they're just fantastic. So that is probably the highlight throughout this experience, is just how wonderful the students have been working together and, you know, with each other and all of that. So I've really enjoyed that. And people can just come tonight and see our show, come this next weekend. This is a really fun time, and I think that it is a perfect musical for where we are right now, and it is a wonderful musical to help people see human nature and how we can love each other. And so, and it's fun. One of the main subs is "We Got the Beat," so a lot of people know that one, and it's a really, really good time.
The show again is Head Over Heels. It runs this weekend and the next weekend at Wartburg Auditorium on the campus of Carthage College. And you can go to carthage.edu to find out more information on how to purchase tickets, although tickets will certainly be available at the door, but otherwise through the box office. And at the helm is stage director of this production, Bree Bielo. Bree, it's great to reconnect with you. So glad that your connection to Carthage remains so strong, and that you have brought your energy and affection and abilities to this production of Head Over Heels. Thanks for being my morning show guest. Best wishes to you and the cast and crew.
Thank you, Greg. It was wonderful to talk again.
Tomorrow, on the podcast version of The Morning Show out of the archives, W. Bruce Cameron talking about his beautiful and moving novel, A Dog's Purpose. On Sunday, for National Autism Awareness Month, J. Elder Robison and his memoir called Look Me in the Eye, My Life with Asperger's. To subscribe to The Morning Show podcast, make sure you look for the proper name, The Morning Show with Greg Berg, to enjoy a different morning show 7 days a week. And if you are already a subscriber, please take a moment to drop a review of the podcast. That can help more people find it. On Monday, I'll speak with the filmmakers responsible for a wonderful documentary called Free for All, A History of Public Libraries in America. That documentary airs on American Experience on Tuesday night on PBS stations across the country. On Tuesday, Elizabeth Minnick and her very important book, The Evil of Banality, The Life and Death Importance of Thinking. On Wednesday, the last day of National Autism Awareness Month, I'll talk with Cy Montgomery about her biography of Temple Grandin, and then you'll hear a portion of an interview I was privileged to record with Temple Grandin herself. On Thursday, David C. Higgs from the faculty of UW Parkside, along with three Parkside students recognized for their outstanding research work. 1 week from today, attorney Mike Pompantonio talks about his new novel, The Middleman, which talks about the presence of middlemen in the pharmaceutical industry that helped to drive up prices. The Morning Show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the next Metropolitan Opera High Definition simulcast is tomorrow. It's Mozart's great comic masterwork, The Marriage of Figaro at Tinseltown in Kenosha or the Renaissance in Racine. Go to metopera.org for more information. Variable cloudiness today. We do have a 50% chance of rain showers developing with a high of 56 degrees, cloudy overnight with a low of 38, sunny tomorrow and a high of 56 degrees, Sunday sunny and a high of 63, into the upper 70s on Monday. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha.